Just go with me on this. I know what I'm doing.
Hello, everybody. This is Again with This, episode 89. Let's watch Rob Zuniga. No, Rob, as callback joke. Estes in 21 Jump Street. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
So 89. Hello, Tara and Dave. Hello,
hi.
Patreon supporters. Thank you so much for coming with us on this journey back to 21 Jump Street, the original series. Season 4, Episode 2, Say It Ain't So, Pete. This did air in 1989, which I just put together like 10 seconds ago, that it was Episode 89. And oh my God, Dustin Wynn's jacket is 89,000 square feet, and as a congressman, it's it's a lot of 80s.
Yeah,
all these 80s are making me esty.
It's 80s estesitis. So yeah, it's actually a gambling plot in season 4, episode 2, Say It Ain't So, Pete. Let's get into a B plot first. Careering around, it's time for the detective exams. Judy is keen. Harry is basically just back from getting shot and doesn't seem to have much more emotional wherewithal beyond like putting his Bruce Lee poster back up, which is awesome. He and Tom are conflicted. Like, Hansen, as usual, is being a like whatever James Dean-y pill about even being a cop, and he's thinking about giving up his band. And then Penhall is like, oh, no problem, I got this in the bag, I'm not even going to study. Naturally, Judy is the only one who passes, and the show goes in on Penhall thinking it's because of affirmative action. Clip two.
Why don't you just say it, Doug?
Say what?
You think I'm a detective because I'm a woman. A black woman.
Double minority.
Oh, that's just perfect.
What else could it possibly be?
I have a college education.
Oh, that's just great. I have twice as many busts as you. So while you're in college, I'm on the street.
Well, at least college taught me you got to put in the work.
I got 8-10 on the Richter.
Maybe it was the interview.
I nailed the interview. Had those guys eaten out of my hands.
What are you complaining about? You didn't even study.
I didn't have to. I knew the codes backwards and forwards.
So you winged it.
I winged it.
Oh, you're so arrogant. You're so proud of it.
What are you trying to say? That you did better on the written? What did you get?
I got a 950.
She is not nearly smug enough about like just beasting him on that score, first of all. And then later he apologizes and she lets him off the hook almost eagerly, which I kind of resent the show for. Like, I know it was the late 80s, but poor Judy always having to have these teachable moments. But like, they actually had a nice bit of business in there where she's just like, you're being such a white guy. And he's like, fuck you. What'd you get? I didn't have to study because I'm a white guy. Like, I kind of wanted them to go all the way there. I think they almost wanted to, but yeah, that was a little bit of a, that was a little bit of a bummer that they didn't quite take it far enough to make it clear that Penhall is not actually a total jack wagon, which he isn't in, like usually, I don't think.
God grant me the confidence of an average white man is a cliche for a reason.
For
and
a
this
reason.
Is a great reminder of how that can play out in life and in the workplace. And I liked the detail in the writing too, that he's like, I got an 810, and she doesn't jump in there to say, I got a 950, so fuck you. She waits to be asked and then just drops it like it's hot, because it is.
Although whatever, either of us would have been like, nee, 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 nee.
Totally.
But we're bad people and also don't want to be cops. But here's another source of confusion. It's season 4. They're undercover.
Yeah.
They're not detectives already?
Yeah, I didn't understand that either. But I did enjoy
them. They do things differently in Vancouver. Shrug.
In city question mark. Yeah. I do like
Metro.
The meta story of Tom being so ambivalent about his career and life and stuff, when clearly this is Johnny Depp being like, I hate this show. I want to go do other stuff. Please release me to go be in Edward Scissorhands or whatever. You know, like he's clearly just chafing at the star vehicle, especially now that we're into season four and it's so early on, but he clearly like just hates it and doesn't care.
Yeah. And he, I think, hated it. I think he agreed to do the show because Frederick Cut the Rebob Forrest was the captain in the beginning and then got killed off and everyone was sad. Nobody more sad than Johnny Depp, who was like, but it's like, I don't know. Fuller's awesome, in my opinion, but Depp's going to dip. Anyway, fuck that guy. On to the A plot. Throwing the bookie at Rob Estes.
Boo! So, just kidding.
Yeah, sorry. I'm not sorry. So Penhall and Hansen go undercover at a college, which, like, thank you. Because we're in a bar and I'm like, no wonder none of these high school kids is getting carded. Mm-hmm. They're all 32.
Right.
But it is actually a college. Denizens of a certain bar apparently keep getting beat up, although we only see one, and that's Daryl. Robert Estes here apparently has a little bit of a gambling problem. My first notes were, oh no, not his face. Because he has a very like turn of the 80s and 90s haircut, but he's still so hot.
Yeah, he doesn't really do it for me in Melrose, but here it's like, oh, okay, I get it. Like he's less beefy and he's like the angles of his face are much more undeniable, shall we say.
Yeah. I mean, he's not usually my thing either, but he is pretty.
Yeah.
Look, my dad was a big Silk Stockings fan, and I'm not entirely sure it was Mitzi What's-Her-Name. Like, I think even my dad was like, yeah, that guy's cute. Anyway, it's clear fairly early on what the outlines of this are, because we have seen television programs before. You've got Penhall's co-bouncer. I don't remember the character's name. It's Rick Aiello.
Yeah.
Yes, Danny Aiello's son, RIP. He passed last year. Pancreatic cancer. Mm. We miss him. Half his IMDb entry is like beefy cop number two, which makes me smile.
Yeah.
And then we also figure out like years ahead of any of the characters who are detectives and police investigators, who is the Duke in this situation. And it's actually a Duchess.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have to sit through absolutely interminable establishing shots of Tom lurking in hallways or people in bars doing all the things you do in bars, the better to, I guess, get the show's money's worth from the B-52s tracks they paid for and credited right up top, which was like, this is exactly when we are. Like, not just the B-52s, who are still great, but also the difference. Like, I always think back to that interview I did with the great Eric Deggans, now of NPR, I believe, when we were talking about like 41-minute dramas versus 48-minute dramas of 10 or 15 years before. Mm-hmm. And it's like those extra minutes are literally all people walking and people driving, and they add nothing.
Yeah.
There's also a fair bit of PSAing about sports betting, which I am quite sorry to say could probably have been written last week and aired on a current teen show without much change. Clip three.
It's not legal. It's legal to bet in Las Vegas. It's legal to go to the track and bet the horses. The state runs a lottery.
That's different because the money then goes to education.
The money is a tax on the poor. It's a numbers racket.
The odds of winning are, like, worse than getting hit by a bolt of lightning.
In Oregon, they have a lottery based on the NFL. What about that?
Well, then you're rooting for the spread. You're not even interested in the teams.
So is everybody else, man. Wake up. Football's the most popular game in the country. Why?
They play only once a week, and you can bet on it.
If it wasn't for the point spread, it wouldn't be half as popular. Point spread keeps the teams even. Keeps the bettors interested. Keeps them from switching the channels.
I mean, that horrible ADR aside, and come on, show, you're in season four and you're like King Shit of Fuck Mountain on your proto network right now. Mm-hmm. This is usually like the Hansen Pinko speech.
Yeah.
But, good point.
Yeah. But like, it also underscores how, like, this is why I hate to be, there is nothing more boring on a TV show than a sports betting plot line. Like,
yeah.
Who cares? Who cares? And it's partly for the reasons that Penhall lays out, which is like, it's basically almost legal in certain circumstances. And it's certainly an illegal activity that gets winked at a ton. But also, who cares? Like, it's so boring to watch. And especially in a fictional context where it's like, oh no, my team lost, where it's like, oh, in the fictional game that never happened. Like, this is, it's all so contrived and stupid. And you can see every plot, quote, twist, unquote, coming like from a million miles away, because the point of these episodes is always it's bad and people only lose and they're ruining their lives, which, like, yes, but also, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, there are aspects of it like, you know, they were using real teams for once instead of like, well, the New York Knights against you know, Nippon Ham Fighters. Like, okay, guys, just use the real teams, which they did.
Yeah.
And it all kind of tracked. And then it's like, oh, he started betting on baseball. Like, some of it was like realistic to the way people who actually care about sports, but also care about betting on stuff.
Yeah.
Are. Mm-hmm. But then it was also sort of unrealistic that this guy would be such a degenerate at the age of 19 that he would just bet on any and all sports and play poker.
Yeah.
And he like heated a plate and put some fleas on it and he's racing them. Like, there's a turtle race in this shit. We'll get back to it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, especially over 47 and a half minutes, it's like, We're so far ahead of you, and like with the synthesizer plinking, like, please have Tom eavesdrop on something that we already know quickly. Mm-hmm. We got shit to do.
Yeah.
Daryl continues to struggle with addiction, occasionally in montage form, thank you, editors, while the Jump Streeters wait for Rick and Duchess to slip and admit to something. Traditionally, this, quote, initially considered a perp, but also obviously a Vic because of his age role, on this show is staffed by a before they were famous or sometimes they never got famous for very good fucking reason. Uh-huh. Who's doing all the face acting and all the glycerin hogging. Mm. And while Estes is not exactly Gandalfinian with the subtlety, he is several steps up from what you usually get in a role like this. Here he is kind of, I think, basically realizing that he's hit the end of the line with this shit by making his mom cry about savings bonds he wants her to cash in. He has to do just his side of this phone conversation, and he's pretty good.
Yeah.
Clip 4.
Well, I thought maybe you could cash in some of those savings bonds. Yeah, I know. No, Mom, please. Calm down. No. No, I'm not in any trouble. Yeah. I know Dad works hard. But remember, you always said you were saving those bonds for college. Well, you know, here I am in college. Would you just think about it, okay? No. Mom, please don't say no.
I found that pretty affecting, given that it was like, should have happened like 10 minutes before it did. But aside from that, like, in this famously visual medium of podcasting, it's hard to get some of the micro expressions. But I mean, Rob Estes, good at, like, very pretty, but also not bad at acting. And given the writing that he's got, I was impressed.
Yeah. Because it's not clear until that moment. Like, we don't know what kind of a background he even comes from. Like, maybe it's not a big deal for him, and that's why he's being so reckless. But then this phone call really sells it, where it's like, oh, he is fucked. Like,
yeah,
he's really fucked up his life in a big way. I agree. This was the standout moment of the episode for me.
But yeah, I mean, other than that, like, not as cringy as some Jump Street episodes. There's a lot of stuff that still, you know, endured. It is pre fucking Dennis Booker. You're welcome. I actually thought we were going to have to deal with a little Greek, the Greeks, but no Greco yet. it's not as goofus and gallant as it can be about these issues. It had the good sense to go to a college. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was all right. But oh man, like at one point they're at the track, they cue up the William Tell overture, and the whole thing plays while they're cutting back and forth with like slow mo and to the horses. And all I got out of that was like, I mean, again, this could have been 39 minutes, but also hashtag ban horse racing. Seriously, it is time.
Yeah.
Hate it.
Yep.
And turtle racing, although that was kind of cute. The one turtle was like, nope. It just like pulled his legs in and was like, nah, I'm not doing this.
Yeah. That bar is really, really lawless. It's like fucking Money Plane at old Rosalita's with what they'll
do. You want a fucking alligator?
Thank you, Dave. yeah, this is the third episode of 21 Jump Street I've ever watched in my life. One of the previous two being the one with Jason Priestley.
That's about mm-hmm. 7 jumps per street per episode for you.
That's right. So it's, you know, I never watched it at the time. It's a little bit corny for me, but I have to say the standout in this episode, other than Estes, who I thought did fine, is Peter DeLuise. So good. Yeah. I mean, he really sells the Penhall fucking around plotline, but he's also really good in the scenes where he's, you know, the bouncer who's trying to, you know, do his vice shit. And mm-hmm. the other bouncer at one point is like, why are you asking me all these questions? Are you a cop? And Penhall's like, yeah, I'm an undercover cop. Like, he just says everything that is true, but in a sarcastic voice, which is very funny because, you know, you don't have to admit it if you're asked if you're a cop. That's what TV says, and it's not true. But he does it anyway, and it's very amusing.
Yeah. He, having watched it again periodically to like recap it for Tomato Nation or whatever, like I recall at the time finding Penhall like super corny and thinking the humor was not that funny. But Peter DeLuise is actually very good at being right on the line of like this Homer Simpson-y sort of character, but also this like thoughtful, basically good, not broody.
Yeah.
Guy.
Yeah.
That everybody else except Jenko is just brooding all the time. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I mean, it's better than I remembered, but still not quite good. And Rob Estes, pleasant surprise.
Yeah. Well, I learned my lesson. I'm going to stop betting on football all the time.
Thank God.
It's called a money plane. Some of the baddest motherfuckers on the planet are on that plane, all craving action. Whatever you want to wager on, the money plane has you covered. You want to bet on a dude fucking an alligator? Money plane.
Everybody, this is Again With Again With This, episode 114. Let's watch Lisa Rinna go off in Amsterdam on the Real Housewives of Beverly Hills exclamation point. Now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
I panicked because suddenly there was more words in that title than I expected. Mm-hmm. And my breath wasn't at the right spot. I had a whole panic situation and I must go now.
You did great.
Thanks.
You did.
Also doing great. Our Patreon supporters, thank you so much for mm-hmm. being here. Thank you for your support. Thank you for, in a roundabout way, helping us pay for Peacock so that we could watch this episode of The mm-hmm. Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, Amsterdam. This episode aired March 3rd, 2015, and I guess I should explain what the show is. I feel like even if you were on the International Space Station, you know what it is.
Yeah.
The Real Housewives franchise is on Bravo. They have a number of different casts in various cities, now internationally. And it's they're a bunch of rich ladies and they get into contrived situations and fight on camera, right? That's basically it. The cast of Beverly Hills as of this episode is Eileen Davidson, daytime Emmy-winning star of Days of Our Lives. Randy Glanville.
No choice but to stand.
That's right. Shown with her Emmy in the credits, like they make sure you know.
Yeah.
Brandy Glanville, Eddie Cibrian ex-wife, quite publicly cucked by Leanne Rimes. Yolanda Hadid, celebrity mother and David Foster ex-wife. Kim and Kyle Richards, sisters and former child stars. Their half-sister Kathy Hilton, as in Paris, his mother, is on the show now in 2022, but officially just as a friend, not a cast member. Lisa Vanderpump, restaurateur and animal lover, who, because the world of reality TV celebrities is small, has already been in an episode of this bonus podcast, the cooking show that we did with Jenny and Tori. And of course, La Rinna. Just a note about Lisa Rinna in our timeline. We are recording this on September 14th. Speculation has been swirling for a while that she's been fired from Real Housewives. So by the time you hear this, that may have been confirmed. She has been salty about the current most recent season because her mother Lois died in November. And while the show was filming, Rinna felt the show's editors did not give Lois enough of a tribute. That's the official reason that she's got problems. Also okay. happening this season, unfortunately, Jax, the son of current cast member Garcelle Beauvais, who is Black, became the target of racist online attacks amid an ongoing feud involving Garcelle, Erica Jane, which, like, mind your own side of the street, Mrs. Indicted for Fraud, Diana Jenkins,
seriously,
and Rinna. Bravo posted a message denouncing these attacks. All of the housewives reposted it on their own social media, including Rinna, but then she deleted it. I'm not going to repeat some of the hate that's been directed at Jax because it's really horrifying. Would be regardless, but this kid is 14, like fucking hell. But anyway, when some fans noticed that Rinna had deleted the message of support to Garcelle and Jax, Lisa said she had archived it because she had decided to keep her feed positive, but then also posted a story accusing the show's producers of organizing a bot campaign against Jax to make Rinna look bad. And then she just deleted all Housewives content from her Instagram entirely. Seems like a pretty clear signal she's been canned. We'll see. You maybe will have seen by the time you hear this. A lot of this comes from a post of Gawker that we will link in the show notes. Are you ready to talk about Amsterdam, Sarah?
I guess.
Okay. So
we should also note, where did Kyle Richards show up in the Starverse? Was it 90210 or Melrose?
I think 90210. She knew what's his face, Durning, Matt.
Right.
She was someone who was a friend of the comatose whoever, his ex.
Right.
Yes. So Amsterdam is only Lisa Rinna's 22nd episode of this series. I would say, regardless of all of the horrible shit she's doing in our timeline, she makes a strong case in this for why she was hired.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of organizing the episode into plots like we do on the main show, I've broken it down into the B and A fights for obvious mm-hmm. reasons. Other stuff happens around them. The ladies go on a bike ride. They meet Yolanda's mother and brother. That's basically it. Everyone behaves themselves. Who cares? Sarah, anything to add about the non-fight content of this episode?
No.
All right. Let us dispense with the B fight first. All of the ladies minus Kim, who is officially sober, and we'll get to it, go with Yolanda's brother Leo to a coffee shop, which in Amsterdam is a cafe where you can order weed and hash in various forms. The best known, even to my dork ass, is being Space Cake, which is infused with weed or hash, I guess. And this episode aired in 2015. It was probably filmed in late-ish 2014, therefore. Medical marijuana dispensaries were kind of a gray area in terms of legality, but I lived in Los Angeles at this time. I can tell you, they were everywhere, and the process of getting a card to allow you to get your medicine there was extremely common knowledge, even to, again, a dork like me. So while I can tell from context, I'm not supposed to be on Brandy's side in any dispute, but she definitely has a point in clip one.
No, but in all I think I'm getting a contact high. It may be psychological.
It's just exhausting seeing these women pretend to be something they're not. Almost everyone I know smokes a little pot. Who cares?
Was everyone here pretending like they've never smoked pot in their lives?
I have.
I have too, but I'm not doing it.
I don't.
The last time I smoked pot, I was with you, so let's not pretend like we're angels.
Thanks, Brandy.
Sure.
I don't want to say that because of my children, Brandy.
Well, you don't want to say it, then don't do it.
I'm not. Okay. But I don't want to say that because of my kids. It's a parenting choice, you know what I mean? That's
really?
That is my opinion, and you know,
okay, that's your opinion, but like, you're just sitting here and pretend all day long.
You always like
that's the truth.
Do things like that that are whatever. It's fine. She's dangerous, and she just throws things out there. Not f-ing cool.
I mean, really? Like, it seems like a weird. It just seems weird that we're so far away already culturally from this time when you had to sort of create the fig leaf of not committing this misdemeanor.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also like, if you're a rich person in a big city.
Yeah.
Come on. Like, everybody knows that you're not. It's like, so what exactly is in space cake? Like, seriously.
Right.
Everyone knows what's happening here. You're in Amsterdam.
Okay, A, you're in Amsterdam. B, you were a child star who came of age. Like, you were a teenager in the 70s. Like, weed is probably the least of what you have done, Kyle
Which
Richards.
Vanderpump basically says as much right. in a talking head at some point. But it's also like, I mean, I guess I see Kyle's point. But the other hilarious thing is whenever they're like, you know, we have kids. We don't want them to.
I know.
What, see this or be influenced? Like, when you're in Amsterdam, your kids are in your shoe closet. They know exactly where your pot is, and they're smoking just enough so that you don't notice it's gone.
Pot, if you're lucky, they're probably stealing your pills. Like, they're probably raiding mm-hmm. your Xanax to make sure and like counting them out to make sure they don't take more that you know, enough that you're going to notice.
Right.
I'm just saying. Exactly. I'm saying this in a general sense. I obviously don't know anything about what drugs anyone on Real Housewives does, but
right.
Like,
or
Brandy
their kids.
Has a point.
We're just saying, kids, yes. Teenagers have acted fairly consistently over time.
Yes.
Sorry.
Right. If it's not drugs, it's booze. Like, they're, you know, they're taking a sip and filling it with water or Snapple mm-hmm. or whatever. And
my dad and his brothers continued to do until my grandmother's death. And there was a bottle of Cutty Sark where the liquid was the color of straw. Like,
aw.
I mean, yeah.
Guys, at least use tea. Come on now.
I know. they absolutely should have known better, every single one of them. But
yep. And I also just want to add, by this point in history, my grandmother had made and eaten pot brownies more than I personally have done. I'm being sincere, wow. Not lying because I'm Amazing. Worried my kids or parents are going to hear this. Like, my grandma also has a tattoo. She's definitely more of a badass than me, but like, weed is not a big deal. All of this performative, we're so naughty bullshit is extremely tiresome, probably especially for Leo, who is probably like, why did I even come if you're all going to sit here and act like you're not going to eat it?
Well, and their mom too. Like, yes. In the scene before that was like, no one bothers because we're not tourists.
Exactly. Yes. Anyway. Brandy's apparently worried that she's getting lost in the shuffle of this episode because she decides to bring it up again when they're on their way back to the hotel in clip two.
Anyone and everyone can say whatever the f*** they want to say about me, but I can't say the truth about them, and it's f***ing annoying.
Are you talking about me?
Yeah. You guys can all have a f***ing opinion about me. You can say whatever the f*** you want, but God forbid I tell the truth about you, then the world's ending because you're a great parent. Well, how the f*** do you think it makes me feel when you're all talking shit about me?
I've never said, I said, actually,
you all you love, have.
I've never said you're a bad parent.
You all
I said
have
you love those boys.
I have an anger and drinking problems. You guys are the biggest hypocrites of
by
all
the way,
f***ing time.
Do you know what I said that you're actually.
What is wrong with her?
Okay, like.
Brandy is me every time someone tries to speak rationally to Teresa Giudice at Real Housewives of New Jersey. It's just like, Brandy, I have you just arrived again from the International Space Station? Like,
mm-hmm.
this
yeah.
is not, you're the villain today.
Yeah, just it's true. This is a classic case of being right in an annoying way. Like, mm-hmm. her anger about this situation is just as performative as whatever was happening in the coffee shop about like, ooh, let's be bad. Like, shut up. Everyone shut up.
Mm-hmm.
But then Kyle decides to keep it going by turning around to pick at Brandy more. Yolanda has to tell them both to quit yelling in the street because they are embarrassing her in front of the rest of Amsterdam. I'm paraphrasing. But that's basically it for the B fight. Anything else to add?
No.
All right. Let's move on to the A fight between Lisa Rinna and Kim. And I should say, in case it wasn't obvious, this isn't a show I watch. I've seen individual episodes. I'm vaguely aware of the ups and downs of the cast and whatever is happening in their lives because I am alive in America. Mm-hmm. But I did go to our Twitter to ask which was the most important Rinna episodes of the show. The consensus was this one, although there's another one from later in the run where Rinna has a showdown with Denise Richards, another fellow Melrose mm-hmm. alumna, and we will get to that one too, because I read a recap and it sounds crazy. Mm-hmm. But this fight was such an event that when its fifth anniversary came around in 2020, our friend Joe Reed wrote a whole post about it at Primetimer. We will have linked it in the show notes. The great thing about the construction of the show is how well they situate the new viewer in the backstory, so you can choose sides. I mean, the sides mm-hmm. they want you to choose, but still, they let you do that in an informed way. Mm-hmm. And in this case, we get flashbacks to the private jet flight to Amsterdam where Rinna, out of concern or to stir the shit, or both, tries to check in with Kim about her sobriety, and Kim furiously shuts her down. And when Kyle arrives at the hotel, she says that things between her and Kim have been bad since a poker night at Eileen's earlier in the season, which is another legendary episode. Our dear Joe tells us Kim arrived at clearly inebriated and that she's used to being Kim's punching bag. Kim also shows up to this lobby meetup last, which she consistently does through the episodes. I already know Kim would have turned, Sarah would have turned against Kim on this basis alone, just for being late all the time.
Yeah.
So they all go out to what Joe says is lunch. He's the expert. I'll go with that. I thought it was an early jet lag dinner, but either way, they're out for a meal at a restaurant. I'm not here to say that these shows are scripted, but if they were, Yolanda could not have teed Rinna up any better than this. Clip three, it's long.
I'd love to go around the table and see if any of you have something to share that, you know, I don't know, that connects us on a deeper level. I really wanted to share with you guys, especially with you, because you were with me when it happened, was that my daughter got a DUI. The thought of what could have happened to her, like, it shook me, you know? But I just wanted to share that with you girls, because I think sometimes we talk, you know, we try to hide all these things from each other and, you know, just to pretend that we're all so perfect. Well, guess what? We're not perfect. My life isn't perfect either. In Beverly Hills, nobody really shows anymore the true core of who they are as a human being. And I think that to me is important.
As a mother, obviously you can't control their choices, you know? You're going to cry. Why are you going
to
cry?
It's emotional to me.
Oh, no.
It's emotional.
Stop. It's okay. It's all good.
Why is it emotional? It's so long ago, but I lost my sister when I was six to a drug overdose.
Yeah. Yeah.
And alcohol.
My sister died of a secondal and alcohol overdose. And she was 21. So I have really deep-rooted issues about people dying from alcohol and drug overdoses. It's in my DNA. It's in my blood.
I didn't really process it. So I'm so terrified of my own children and everyone, yeah. You know, if I ever come across too strong about anything. I definitely have a fear of it, and an Achilles heel, and I'm sorry if I've ever, you know, gotten into your business. I never meant to. I only wanted to.
Where you at?
Gotten into your business?
Yes, you have. And we've discussed that.
I only meant to help.
Lisa, I have been sober for 3 years. And in 3 years, my friends right here and my family have not ever seen me like that in 3 years.
But I saw you like that.
Okay, first of all, Rinna framing this as like, I'm sorry, I'm such a good person that I intruded or overstepped my bounds in our like fake TV friendship is very like, my big fault at a job interview is I'm a perfectionist or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, it's, you know, I'm sorry. This is just in my DNA. I can't help it. I just care so much. Sorry. Like, okay.
Yeah. Also, classic Real Housewives, like, not understanding what words and expressions in English mean. That's not what an Achilles heel is, but okay.
No.
The thing that was striking to me about this was that she, like, she's playing on Melrose, this character whose sister died. Like,
right.
Granted, it was different circumstances. They were closer in age, but like the not even dimension this gives, but like the shadow this casts over that whole role.
Yeah.
Not through any fault of Rinna's or anything, but just like, I did not know this information. Like, I knew that this, I was vaguely aware of this fight because, again, you know, we think about TV for a living. We live in the world. Like, I basically knew these outlines, and I knew, like, Kim had been struggling with sobriety and so on and so forth. But,
right.
like, that was this, you know, that her sister died in real life was like, like you just have this, like, focus pull moment in your head where you're just like, it's just like really disorienting to go back and think about all the times that you've accused Taylor of being a creep. And it's like, what is being brought to that performance exactly? Like,
right.
It's just a lot. I am sorry for her loss. That's got to be a really crazy thing to deal with as a 6-year-old or at any time. But it's just like, it was just this holy shit moment.
Yeah.
But also, oh my God, like, Kim, this is the most classic Real Housewives moment. It's like, here is the apology that is basically direct. And it's like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like, kind of, I'm sorry that you felt offended, or
right.
I'm sorry, I'm such a good person, like you said. But like, that's as close as you're getting. This is the fucking Real Housewives.
Yep.
And of course, Kim has to be like, well, but you still sucked, though. And it's like, okay, like, everybody understands the assignment, which is to, like, maintain or mutate this fight so that it can continue until the next trip out of
town. That's right. Yes.
And once you realize that this is, this nonsense is the fuel, and you see them trying to get us from fight to fight without making it too obvious, you almost appreciate the craft.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in the service of, like, complete garbage that a lot of people are like, this is what's wrong with America. And I don't necessarily disagree. But,
yeah, yes.
Like, you know, both Rinna and the Richardses and everyone else involved, and especially Elaine, who, like, kind of gets to...
Oh, Eileen. Yeah.
Eileen, sorry. What did I say? Elaine?
Elaine, yeah. Sorry.
Eileen, who sort of puts her, like, sets herself apart from some of this stuff, but also is like, you know, she was on, like, a soap that really was scripted, like, overtly, so I guess she feels like she's better than this, which is hilarious. Anyway, it's really something.
Yeah, it is. And I'll also say, I'm no expert, it sounds like Kim has maybe already had something, like, not to be whatever, I'm not the boss of her sobriety, but it feels like if she were really as committed to it as she says, we would have seen her, like, call ahead to the hotel, say, take out the minibar or something to, like, bolster her own case or something, because people do that. And, you know, I'm just saying, she's always last to come down. It makes you have to wonder, what is she doing up in her room? Or even, like, what are the producers making her stay to do? Like, no, we just need a couple more minutes of an interview and then make her come down so that we suspect her, whatever.
I mean, and, you know, I had a bad reaction to allergy medication.
Yes.
Is one of the oldest addict excuses in the book. And, like, I don't know who she thinks she's fooling. Again, whatever is going on, whether it's nothing, whether she had a nip at the minibar, I don't judge her. But, you know, interact with any part of the culture. This is like when we're talking about Jenny and Tori, and it's like, do you have any relationship, even third hand, with life as it's actually lived? Like, do you consume any culture that's not about you?
Right.
Like, come on.
Yeah.
Like, everybody knows this stuff. Like, you are protesting way too much. You're getting way too pissy.
Yep.
Don't make a side with Rinna. Like, that's not... Okay.
No, it's true.
But I guess if that's what's in the script, then she's, you know, doing it. So there's a lot of actors on this, on these franchises, and especially on this one, because Beverly Hills, so...
Well, let's get to that cover story. If it is, I don't know, in clip 4.
I said that night I had taken something for pain, and it obviously didn't work for me. And I let me finish. And I said that. It didn't react to me. The next day, I ended up in the hospital for a week. If any of my friends right here had seen that more than once in 3 years, my friends, my sister would have come to me, and they would have been concerned. You have gone around to everybody and talked to them.
How do you know I've gone around to everybody?
And you
too. Don't point your finger at me,
Kim.
That's Eileen.
And you two asking where I've gone to treatment. Do I have a sponsor?
Well, we've asked you.
You asked me if I was okay. And
I said I am fine.
And I told you on the plane,
Kim,
I am fine.
We care about you.
I'm concerned about you. First of all, let's not talk about...
Excuse me.
I'm concerned about you at your situation at home. You want to bring out my stuff? Let's talk about your home life. Excuse me, I'm not talking to you.
I'm talking to you.
And I'm talking
Shut your f***ing mouth. I've had enough of you, you beast.
Beast?
Yeah.
How dare you?
How dare me?
You came into my home.
And I apologized.
Actually,
and in 3 years...
Actually, you didn't.
I don't like you.
Guess what? I don't particularly like you either.
Well, good.
I can't find one damn thing to like about you right now in the moment.
Good. I've never found one thing to like about you.
I did nothing.
From your hair to your face to your attitude.
Why do you look like that?
And then Kyle. Oh, God, Kyle.
Oh, man.
Poor Kyle.
So, I can't tell if it was in the bit that we clipped. I was listening for it and didn't hear it. But there's a line about Kim where Kim tells Lisa to, like, have some bread and calm down.
Mm.
And per Joe, that remark lands because there have apparently been rumors about Lisa having an eating disorder. So we'll back up to some of the accusations from clip four. But first, let's get to clip five, where Kim decides to lash out at Kyle, one of her last allies, in the climax of the fight. Clip five.
Kyle, shush up. You should have said right from the beginning, in 3 years I have been okay.
I talked to him
on the plane and you were like this.
Yeah, because I'm going to act like this, Kim. You want me to defend you even though you're acting like that?
I've never needed you to defend me because you've never had.
Kim, yes, I have.
She does defend you, Kim. She does defend you 1,000%.
She defends me more than you do.
Randy.
Kathy would not ever act like this.
Kim.
Kathy would have my back like a real sister. You have been doing this to me for years.
It's not okay to talk to your sister or anyone like that.
You don't understand the relationship.
No, I don't, but it's not okay to talk to anyone like that, Kim. It's just not okay. Your behavior's not okay.
Really?
Yeah, it's not okay.
Why don't you have a piece of bread and maybe you'll calm down a little?
Shame on you. You're disgusting, Kim.
Please.
Can I interfere 1 second? I understand your sensitivity because you've worked really hard for 3 years. When I talked to her, she said, Yolanda, I've lost 2 brother-in-laws. My husband has only been sober for 3 years.
Let's talk about the husband.
Oh, wait, excuse me? Did you just say let's talk about the husband?
Let's not talk about what you don't want out.
You know what?
Wait,
let me tell you something.
Don't you
ever touch my husband. Ever.
Just saying.
Don't you ever want out for everybody to know?
You better watch what you talk about me or everybody will know.
Everybody will know.
Everybody will know.
You understand that?
Everybody will know what you don't want.
Okay. So what you can't see is Rinna literally goes for Kim's throat, like tries to choke her or, you know, does a good enough job making us think she might. And the smash she heard was her breaking her glass on the table. And so at the end of that clip, Kyle just runs out. Joe wrote in his post, it's Kyle in a nutshell, conflict avoidant and overly dramatic at the same time. And it's the rare time that anyone has fled a housewife scene without making it look like a self-righteous stomp off. Like, it is gorgeous. So,
yeah.
So let's back up to some of the accusations. Kim's reference to things about Rinna's husband, Harry Hamlin, that Rinna would not want aired on the show. I took to the internet. And I also texted Joe to ask if there was a consensus about what is the thing. what does everyone think is the thing that Rinna is trying to keep secret? And he like went to his, you know, coterie of housewives academics to find out. It's like there is not. There's a number of theories, but there no one has actually sussed out like what the thing is. So here are the possibilities. There's a Reddit thread that posits that while Harry presents himself as sober, which we heard in the clip, someone says he's only been sober for a year. He actually is not sober. So Rinna constantly picking at Kim. Enraged Kim because she saw it as Rinna projecting and being a hypocrite about it because she's worried about Harry.
Okay.
That's one. I also found a blog post that says Kim was alluding to Harry cheating on Rinna when he is at their cottage in Muskoka in Canada. So this episode now officially counts as CanCon. Congratulations to everyone in Canada. Also that he had an affair with Julianne Phillips years and years ago when they were both in a movie called Ally and Me. And then the same post also mentions times that Rinna has responded to rumors that Harry is gay and closeted. But there seems to be less evidence, at least that I could find, about that. So, like, the fact that this legendary episode still has this, like, kind of unsolved mystery at the heart of it is really only makes it better because, like, no one seems to be able to agree on, like, what was the thing that she is trying so hard to keep secret.
I would just have assumed that it was that Hamlin cheated on her multiple times, which, like, it's actors.
Totally. Yes. And who knows what arrangement they may have. Like, this is always the question, right? When there's rumors of infidelity, you don't know what is being consented to on either side. But, like, it's clear from the B fight, like, part of what these women are doing with the show or trying to do through the show is, like, construct an image of themselves.
Right.
And that there are, you know, there are third rails that they've all sort of agreed tacitly or not aren't going to get brought up. Like Kyle smoking pot with Brandy is obviously one that she was like, my kids. And then whatever is happening with Rinna and Harry that is apparently an open secret with the cast is another one.
Right. Well, and then you also have the problem. And I don't like, I watch one Housewives franchise and I don't follow what is happening like in real time, but there's always the problem of like whatever drama is happening on social media, like a year sometimes more. In advance of what you see.
Yes. Yeah.
On the air. So, and then a lot of this shit gets hashed out at the reunion and then you have to like reset again and then you're slingshotted back into the future / present.
Right.
It's a complicated cultural construct.
It is. So there's a bit of a denouement to the fight. Yolanda's embarrassed about the scene that they have made in front of other patrons that we eventually see in the background where I was like, oh my God, they were not in a private room. Like, people are there watching this. Holy shit.
Yeah, Kyle almost trampled a couple people trying to get away from this fight.
She tells Kim she should not have involved family members in this. Kim says it involves her kids when anyone questions her sobriety. Again, kids as an excuse for anything potentially humiliating happening or being discussed on the show is annoying just in this episode. I imagine it's something people use as a get out of jail free card all the time, just based on what we see
like
here.
If you cared that much, you wouldn't be doing this garbage. But
absolutely. Totally. Also, Brandy, who is pretty much Kim's very last supporter, largely because she's the one the rest of them apparently hate almost as much as they hate Kim, basically entirely stays out of this until it's all over, including when Kim like directly refers to her as like, she's been more supportive to me than you have, Kyle. And Brandy's like silent. But
she also has that like talking head where she's like, it's not me this time.
Right.
And has an amazing dark fuchsia lip, not for nothing, that it just was funny to me. Like, I'm sure Brandy's terrible, but that was relatable.
Totally. But then after it's over, she keeps bitching that she's covered in glass, which, like, I doubt it. But there's a debrief in Kyle's room where Rinna pretends she's going to go home early so everyone else can tell her to stay, which they do. She then says she's not going to talk it out with Kim, but then Kim comes to her room the next morning. They basically both, I'm sorry you feel that way at each other for the sake of harmony on this bike trip and in order to not get disinvited to Yolanda's mother's place. And that's it. I like this feels like a throwback to when housewife fights could be low stakes fun and not extremely dark like the ones that I hear about now. But I did not hate watching this episode. What did you think?
I didn't either. And when the next Dons rolled and it was like basically Eileen being a bitch in talking head interviews nonstop about everyone and looking amazing and having a wonderful whiskey baritone like myself, I was like, I keep, if this were up for the canon, I would have kept watching this and I would have voted it in because very classic.